Odilia Galván Rodríguez is a poet, editor, and activist. She's the author of 5 volumes of poetry, including her latest, The Nature of Things. She facilitates creative writing workshops nationally and continues to moderate the Facebook page Poets Responding to SB 1070, bringing attention to social justice issues that affect the lives and well-being of people everywhere. Odilia, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for inviting me.
How are you?
I'm good. I was saying that I just passed through El Paso on Saturday, coming right back from Tucson.
Ah.
So it was really beautiful to be in that area and just that wonderful drive.
Yes, yes. And you're on your way. You were on your way to, what did you say, Corpus Christi?
Yeah, back to Corpus in the Valley.
Yeah. Are you originally from there?
I was born in Galveston, but all my family is from Brownsville.
Yeah.
And Harlingen. My tío Américo Paredes.
Oh, he's
wrote a lot about
great
the area.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm familiar with your tío's work. So wonderful. I'm a fan of his work, too. And I'm a fan of your work, you know, and also the work of Francisco X Alarcón, who co-edited this book with you. The book is called Poetry of Resistance, Voices for Social Justice. And by the way, Odilia, we are dedicating this show to the late, great Francisco Alarcón, who I understand it spearheaded the impetus for this collection. Is that right?
Well, he spearheaded the impetus for the project, which is Poets Responding to SB 1070,
okay,
Facebook page,
right,
in 2010, dedicated to this whole issue of racial profiling and xenophobia and racism in
right
the United States,
right,
particularly
right
in Arizona. But in, you know, it spread to other places, and it's not like it spread. It's always been there.
Right. Absolutely. And then, you know, I recall when he started that Facebook page, and I know that, you know, he was kind of putting out a call for just anybody who had any thoughts or ideas or poems, you know, to post them on the page about SB 1070. But a lot of other things were going on as well. You know, there were the 9 students who they handcuffed themselves in front of the state capitol there in Arizona in protest of that. And there are other issues around that, right?
Yes. It was very moving. They actually chained themselves to the door.
Mm.
And, you know, so that was going on. And then, of course, the ethnic studies, you know, the abolition of ethnic studies in
right
Arizona
right
with the HB, I forget, 221 or whatever
right
the number is, you know,
right,
or just all these numbers to erase us again.
Right.
Just crazy.
I really enjoyed reading those poems that were posted on Facebook. And then later on, you know, I don't know, maybe some months later, I learned that it was starting to kind of be compiled into a collection of poetry. How did that, you know, where did that go from Facebook posts to suddenly into an idea for a collection?
Well, we got such an outpouring of work and met so many poets right away. We had, by the time 2011 rolled around, we probably had about 3,000 poems.
Wow.
So Francisco and I started talking, because I was living in California at the time, and Francisco and I started talking about an anthology, because he and I had worked on an anthology back in the early 80s for another group that we were in called Centro Chicano Latino de Escritores, and it never happened. So, but still, we thought this has to happen, and we have to do it. So we talked to the moderators that were working with us and came up with the process on how to pick from all those incredible poems, because
right
they were all incredible.
What
I mean,
a job.
It's hard to say. Yeah, it was very difficult. I mean, the majority of the poems were quality poems that could be in an anthology. So it was very difficult.
I mean, reading some of the posts, of course, on the Facebook page. And for those who are out there listening, and if they're still wanting to sort of tap into that Facebook page, how do they find it?
I ended up naming the page Poetry of Resistance.
Okay.
Or they can just type in, they could do a search for Poetry of Resistance or Poets Responding to SB 1070. And it usually pops up the Facebook page because it has a lot of people on it all the time. So
right
as soon as we get up to 60,000 hits, in a week, and
wow,
you know, one item
incredible
will have, you know, 5,000 hits. So it's still going strong. And you know, I promised the maestro that we were going to continue with the project, and the moderators who are still with us are have recommitted themselves to continue.
Beautiful.
And we're also talking about some other projects, maybe some other volumes of the work.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Or maybe some kind of a blog that includes all the poems. You know, we're brainstorming that.
Right.
See what we're going to do.
Yeah, well, I know that the commitment's been there for, well, since it all started. And so, you know, one of the things that I really enjoy about collections like this, but especially this one in particular, is that, you know, there are so many names of, you know, obviously the more well-known writers, Martín Espada, and of course, our own U.S. Poet Laureate Juan Felipe Herrera, Jenny Lim. And then you, but then you also, in that same compilation, you know, you have these newer rising voices in the literary world, people like Andre Yang and Melinda Palacio and Rich Biar. And so I imagine with that kind of a range, it wouldn't have been so difficult to find a publisher, or was it? I mean, I guess I'm just curious about how that came about.
Well, Francisco had a relationship with the University of Arizona Press because he's published several books with them. Mm-hmm. He knew Kristen over at the University of Arizona Press, and what a better place to do it?
Yeah,
Arizona,
awesome.
Mm-hmm. Because Arizona is where this law was born.
Right.
And it was very gutsy. And that's what I met with Kristen the other day. Yeah. And I said, thank you so much for having the courage to do this book, because it, you know, it's definitely criticizes what happened.
Right.
And it's a historical record of what happened. And it, you know, it'll never go away. It'll always be around. So it's also a history book in some way.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, I think that you hit the nail on the head with that. You know, a lot of publishers these days, and we've had this conversation on this program before, that, you know, publishers these days tend to shy away from taking risks, you know, and that can be from, you know, anything from, you know, being more experimental writing to, you know, to obviously more socially active or socially engaged writing. And so, you know, a lot of publishers would prefer, you know, taking on work that, you know, would just has a quote unquote market and sells better, you know, and so mm-hmm. for a lot of reasons, publishers aren't taking risks these days as much as they did back in probably the 60s, 70s, and even up into the 80s. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that Arizona Press does often in all of those areas, I would say, is that they do take risks. You know, they tend to take risks, and their books do very well. So I was really happy to see this placed with Arizona for that reason, but also, as you mentioned, because that's the hub right there, right? That's the hub of where it's all going down.
Yeah, the hub of hate.
The hub of hate.
Wow, that's a new one. I like that.
It's certainly a hub of a lot of those negative kind of, I think, things when we're talking about, especially literary, how they've banned all these books. And then, you know, we had, of course, I remember the Libro Traficantes who went through there and had readings and all of that kind of thing as well. You know, one of the things, and as a poet yourself and an educator as well, you know, I know you can talk a little about why a law like SB 1070 or any of the other kind of, I think, discriminatory laws like this tend to become important material for writers, you know, and I guess what I'm wondering is how do you see poetry's role in addressing social justice issues of this kind?
Well, I've always considered myself an artist and an activist, mm-hmm. because I have a long trajectory of working for social change and social justice. As a young person, I worked for the United Farm Workers Union on the boycott in Chicago, passing out leaflets, you know, asking people not to buy lettuce and grapes.
Right.
And so my writing has always contained, or I guess I would say better that it's poetry of witness, talking about what I saw in my own family, having come up in from farm workers that were migrant workers that came from Texas to Illinois and all the states in between.
Yeah.
So all that injustice, you know, was important to record. And I think still it's going on because California is still the only state that farm workers have the right to collective bargaining. So it's still an ongoing problem. It does have to do with racism. It has to do with xenophobia because it's kind of saying you people are really not, you're not part of us. You're disenfranchised. You know, we can kind of treat you how we want to treat you because you're not really us. You're other. And my mom used to tell me about the signs that when she was a girl in, you know, in Texas, that said no Spanish, no Mexican, you know, no N-word and no dogs allowed. It's like, it's, you know, very, very harsh after what happened in Texas and with Mexico and all, you know, we know the whole history of that.
Sure.
But this law in Arizona really is born out of fear and hatred again and people thinking that somehow people from Mexico and Central America are coming here for a free handout when they're the people that work the hardest.
Right. And poetry, and you know, can act as a vehicle, right, to sort of for ideas. In fact, I know that Juan Felipe Herrera says that poetry is a way to live a life without boundaries, you know, without borders. And I think that that's, you know, certainly one approach to it, and also a way to open up those sort of places within ourselves that we do have boundaries and borders, you know, because all of us have them. But I think poetry presents an opportunity to open those up, you know.
And I think also that, you know, poets responding to SB 1070 was a way to use poetry as a dialogue about the frustration and the sadness and the anger and all those emotions that people were feeling about this backlash of racism that was coming towards us again. And, you know, another otra ola, another wave of it that, you know, never seems to go away.
That's what I love about this collection also, is it's not, you know, I guess as one might tend to think, especially in reading the poetry of resistance, you kind of get this, you know, I guess it's pigeonholed as it might be poetry that's all sort of rant and anger and hatred, or, you know, anti-establishment, or, you know, but it's, the collection has such a range in terms of emotional range and, you know, intellectual range. I mean, it has all of it. It's not one dimensional in any way. It's actually very, it's just a great read for that reason. You know, there's emotional poems. There are tender sort of stories and anecdotes and, you know, personal anecdotes and personal testimonies, as you call them, witness poems. And so there's so much, it's so rich in that way. What was your criteria, and the editorial board, you and El Maestro Francisco Alarcón, what was the criteria for selecting the poems?
Well, you know, we started a collaboration with Michael Sedano that has a blog called La Bloga. Mm-hmm. And so every week we would put poems up. The moderators would get a list of poems that had been in Poets Responding to SB 1070 notes, and we would vote. And the ones that got the five highest votes would go to La Bloga for a Floricanto. And we did that with Michael pretty steady for several years every week. And then recently we went to twice a month because, you know, all of us are so busy and doing other things in our lives. But I think the way that we decided that we had to go was to narrow it down somehow. We took all the poems that had gone to La Bloga in the Floricanto up to that point and voted on those.
Oh,
and then
I see.
All the poems that got the highest votes went to Francisco and I. And then from there, Francisco and I narrowed them down more. And then, of course, the University of Arizona Press said, this is too much. So we had to cut it in half.
Right.
Almost. So
yeah, absolutely.
That's the process. But by no means is it the only best poetry, because there are so many other poems that did not make it into this collection that are amazing work and poetry of witness, you know?
Absolutely.
And poetry of resistance.
If you're a listener who's just tuning in with us, we are speaking with poet and editor Odilia Galvan Rodriguez about the highly anticipated collection of poetry that she co-edited with the late Francisco Alarcón called Poetry of Resistance, Voices for Social Justice. Odilia, do you have a favorite poem in this book besides your own, of course?
Nah, I don't know. I don't even think mine are my favorite. It's really interesting because how I think about poems is that they have to do something to me when I read them. And so many of these, when I read them, something happens to me. I smile, I cry. I just, like you were saying, just love how you described this anthology, because it's exactly how I feel about it. And and who knows, it was magic how it came together, because I was living in Mexico. I mean, it was crazy. I would come back from Mexico and I'd say, okay, I went over all the poems. Let's get together and go over them. And, you know, we'd be sitting at the maestro's kitchen table for hours and hours and hours.
Wow.
Here's one of my favorites. It's by Joseph Roth. It's called If You Leave Your Shoes.
Okay.
Do you mind if I read it?
No, go ahead.
Okay, cool.
Please.
If you leave your shoes on the front porch when you run to the city pool for swimming lessons, you might end up walking across the sand of the desert in scorched feet, bare like the prophets who knew what it was to burn. If you leave your lover to run to the market for bread and pears, you might return to find your lover gone and the bed covered with knives, hot and gleaming from a morning in the sun. If you leave your country in the wrong hands, you might return to see it swimming in blood able to spit, but not to speak.
Beautiful. You know, I actually recognize some of the poems. I've heard some of the poets read them at different readings across the country, you know, throughout, I don't know, the last few years. And so, and you know, that's what's really interesting about this project is it's very sort of multidimensional in that way. You have obviously the book as a manifestation of what was already being posted on Facebook. But then there are, you know, at readings, you know, when SB 1070 happened, before the Facebook page appeared, you know, there were already, you know, poets were already out there reading their work about, you know, protesting that law and other discriminatory, you know, laws. And I recall, I want to say this was 2011 maybe or 2012, but at the AWP mm-hmm. conference in Washington, D.C., there was a reading for it as well.
Yeah, we did it in front of the Capitol.
Right,
the state Capitol.
Right. That's right. That's great. Right. And it was a fantastic reading. And, you know, one of my favorite moments, in fact, I wish Daniel Chacon was on the show with me right now, but he's off doing something very, very important. But, you know, one of the things, he was there at this reading, I remember, and he was sitting sort of down the aisle from me there. But I recall this one particular moment when Martín Espada read. And after he read, Andre Yang was going to go up after him. And I remember thinking, gosh, you know, Martin, he just killed it. It was so amazing. And I remember thinking, I would not want to be Andre Yang's shoes going up after Martín Espada reads. And then Andre went up and he killed it just the same. It was like fantastic. And it was like everybody was
totally
just cheering. And Andre's poem, I remember, was Why I Feel the Way I Do About SB 1070. And it was kind of, you know, just
it's amazing.
Really, it's a beautiful it's poem. Amazing. And, you know, these yes. poems really, you know, when you read right now, I think of Andre Yang when he read that out loud. These poems have to be read out loud. You know, they really do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some
mm-hmm.
of them are more quiet and contemplative, but others just really have to be read aloud to be felt, you know.
Exactly. And then we have some people who are performance poets in here, like Matt Cedillo, who
right.
when you see him, you know, perform a poem, it's like a whole experience. So, you know, it doesn't even do it justice on the paper, you know.
Right.
So,
right.
yeah, definitely.
So I'm going to shift gears a little bit. You know, like I said at the beginning here, we're dedicating this show to Francisco. And I'm just curious, how did you and Francisco meet?
Wow. He was teaching. We met over 30 years ago because my son is 30. So I think Francisco and I knew each other we've known each other for about 34 years or something. He was
wow.
teaching at UC Santa Cruz, mm-hmm. and I was working at I had left the UFW. That's how I ended up in California, as I had gone out there to work on
right.
Proposition 14, and then Cesar had asked everybody who spoke Spanish to stay and work mm-hmm. organizing farm workers in the field.
Right.
But by that time, I had already left the union, made my way up, you know, I lived in Salinas, then I lived in Watsonville,
right.
then I lived in Santa Cruz, and that's how we met.
Wow.
Through poetry.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Yeah, him and Elba Sanchez was
yeah.
At UC Santa Cruz and included me in some of the anthologies that she was working on up there. I think maybe two or three. Revista Mujeres, she included some of my work in those and did readings up at the U, and that's how I met Francisco. Then we had a couple of events with Adrian Rich. You know, so
wow.
it was the poets of that time that were living in Santa Cruz.
Of course.
And then he invited me to Centro Chicano de Escritores that met in San Francisco with Marti von Galindo, Lucha Corpi, Rodrigo Reyes. Everybody's kind of been through there. Sheree
right.
Moraga. I think right. even maybe Ana Castillo used to go. I wasn't there when she was there, but I know a lot of poets that are now renowned people have gone
sure.
through that Centro Chicano Latino Escritores. So
wow.
that's how Francisco and I have been friends ever since. And, you know, I moved to Cuba and I've lived in Mexico. And so, you know, all that time we were always in touch. And he asked me to come and do a reading that he was organizing to raise money for the earthquake in Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
So I came and we did a really beautiful reading at La Peña. And then right after that, this thing jumped off with the SB 1070, and he said, you know, you want to work with me? I said, of course
right.
I do.
Right.
It's, you know, right up my alley.
Yeah, absolutely.
Art and activism, you know.
Of course.
It's
no, absolutely. So Francisco, he passed away into the next realm on January 15th of this year.
Of course, right on Martin Luther King's birthday.
Right. Wow, I know. What a nice synchronicity. And you know, did Francisco get a chance to at least see the galleys for the book?
You know, it's very interesting. I was at the house, you know, most of the days right before he passed. The night before, The day before I had heard from University of Arizona Press that they were sending a hand-bound copy so that Maestro could have it. When his sister texted me in that morning, because I hadn't gone over to the house yet, she texted me that he had passed on. I guess like a few minutes right after he stopped breathing, the book showed up at the door. The FedEx people or whoever it was that brought it to the house. And it's okay for me to tell this story because it was, you know, because they shared it on Facebook. I think it's okay.
Okay.
But they were able to read it to him. So he was still in the room. I know Maestro saw it and he was able to feel it and he heard some of the poems that they read to him. And so when people say, did he see it? I say, yes, he did.
Well, that's beautiful. And would you mind sharing one of your poems in this collection for our poem of the week?
Yes, it's called Collecting Thoughts from the Universe. What do the stars say about children dying? Or is it their spirits twinkling down? Big smiles on their faces. There's no suffering there. At the border, people act less than human. Frightened, traumatized children in yellow school buses. Their small faces pressed against the windows. They see the gnashing teeth, hear shouts of rage. What kind of war is being waged here? These children fleeing war, fleeing death, looking for a place to dream, or looking for what's left of their family that's already flown away for fear or promise. We wage wars, support criminal heads of state, murderous coups, genocide, the false war on drug kind, the raining down bombs on innocence kind, the scaring of innocent children riding on yellow school buses kind, the murdering of unarmed black people kind. And whom do we help? Does all this war make life better? Who is the real enemy in a land where 1% of the people owns more wealth than the rest of us put together? And can we be put together again?
Beautiful. Thank you so much. We have been speaking with poet and editor Odilia Galvan Rodriguez about the highly anticipated collection of poetry that you co-edited with the late, great, benevolent soul Francisco Alarcón. It's called Poetry of Resistance, Voices for Social Justice, out with the University of Arizona Press. It's one of those you must have on your shelf books, so be sure to pick that up. Thank you so much, Odilia, for joining us.
Gracias for inviting me. I'm so happy. Thank you so much.